I really, really powerfully believe that actually growing your own food, it belongs in down-to-earth areas. I think it makes sense to grow your own. I think it makes sense to grow expensive ingredients in small quantities.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Birmingham Food Podcast. We are your hosts, Food Obsessed Mates, Liam and Carl. I'm Liam.
I'm Carl. Watch out. I didn't know if you were going to say Carl then if I had to
Sometimes I try and
don't worry. I'm Carl either way.
I can see your focus, your laser focus today.
That's it, man. I've nearly finished my tea and I'm set.
10 cups of coffee. I must have had 10 cups of coffee yesterday at Edgbaston.
Oh, mate. It went through that coffee machine like no man's business.
Shame about the rain, but the food was good. Smoke and ash was brilliant. Their pizza.
Yeah, it was really nice to be involved in the judging panel for the food for the first Birmingham Phoenixes game.
Yeah, that was class. That was.
It's a shame there was no cricket because it was all rained off, but it was still a good day in the hospitality. I've never done hospitality either, so.
I've still never done seen a cricket game.
Yeah, you were pretty excited to see your first, like, especially this one, because it's like the most exciting cricket, form of cricket there is, to be honest.
Yeah, everyone sold it to me. Like, no one, I was really not bothered about cricket. And then everyone sold the 100 dream to me and the atmosphere and the loudness and the excitement. And yeah, let down. But the food wasn't a letdown.
No, we got the smoke and ash pizzas.
You and Tom made light work of the wine. It was like at a wedding, we were rubbing them off the other tables.
Yeah, it did have sort of wedding vibes to it, to be fair.
Anyways, how you been?
I'm all right, man. Not too bad. Still recovering from the last couple of weeks.
Anyone who doesn't know, Carl turned the big 4-0.
Yeah, man. You know how I feel? No difference.
Still looking good for 40, man.
I know, man. It's not bad. It's all right. 40's, you know, it's no different to any other age, is it? Nah. It's just a number.
But the only thing is we had a whole week of celebrations, which was good.
Yeah, went up town, Bonehead, the Lamb.
That was a fun day, isn't it? Yeah.
Hit good Big Buff. Buckle.
Oh, Bernard, obviously outstanding as usual. Talk about it all the time. You don't need to hear it.
Auto brew, passing fancies, the anchor, the lamp.
The best Guinness in Birmingham.
Yeah, hands down. Yeah, it was wicked. Good day. NQ64, forgot I went there as well. Mm. It was a good day out.
Yeah, wicked day out.
Yeah, I had a wicked week and I was at Covered Wagon for my actual birthday with my family. Thought, where could I go that I really want? Like, I just basically picked places I really want to go and love.
And for my highlight reel of Birmingham.
Basically, so yeah, after that day out, I was like, right, birthday meal, Covered Wagon, I think.
But then you did cheat on Birmingham for the day after.
I don't think anyone would complain with...
Nah, bucket list. I mean, let's be honest, most people in Birmingham have one eye on Inisher anyway, Inisher. Can't never say
Inisher. Inisher.
Inisher.
Yeah, it's... I went to Inisher on the Wednesday.
Best restaurant in the UK, just voted, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 years in a row now. Yeah. And I can completely see why.
Yeah, special.
It's unbelievable.
I was like, jealous, man. Gareth Ward as well, what a nice guy.
Yeah, we were really looked after. I got to meet Gareth Ward. The place is beautiful. The food is absolutely phenomenal. Like, yeah. I know, like, it's not a restaurant you can go to even probably yearly for most people. I definitely couldn't go yearly. It costs way too much.
It's a bucket list once in a lifetime.
So I was turning 40, so there was enough saving up in advanced, because I knew a couple of years ago that's what I wanted for my 40th. It's all I've ever wanted. As soon as 40th plans started coming into action, I was like, right, that's what I want. We'll go there. And it's just incredible. Like, everyone I know that's been has it down as their number one restaurant they've been to. Mm. And it's now my number one restaurant I've been to. It's absolutely phenomenal food.
I just feel like half of Birmingham's been there. Like, I feel like I'm missing out.
It's 31 courses. You can get the train direct there from Birmingham. That's probably what helps.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, I suppose. A couple of hours, not far.
It's about 2.5 hours, close to 3 hours on the train.
What was the best course?
Had to be the lamb ribs for me.
Yeah, everyone, you know, when you put them pictures up, everyone was mentioning the lamb ribs, weren't they?
What it was the so most talked about bit. They were just the softest, meat I've ever eaten. It was insane. You picked them up. They still held on the bone, which I always want with any type of rib. Mm. And you literally bit into it and there was no bite. You could have like had no teeth and bit into these ribs. They were that soft and silky and tasty, delicious. Like 31 courses, it's hard to pick out two or three dishes that were great because they were all great. But yeah, the lamb ribs were number one, I think.
But the whole atmosphere, the place looks mental. DJ and everything.
Full DJ on, smoke going through the restaurant, mirror ball, or glitter ball rather, and just...
Not a tacky smoke machine, like 80s stuff.
No. You can do what you want. You can wear what you want. They're really chilled. It's a good atmosphere. It's exactly what I want from that end of fine dining, to be honest. Not hoity-toity. I was just in jeans and some trainers and a Black Sabbath top. And that wasn't just me. There were plenty of other diners who just dressed how they wanted. They just want you to be comfortable and enjoy yourself.
A lot of people say, oh, you know, relax, fine dining, which means they've just took the tablecloths off.
Yeah, but it's the way forward for me, I think. If you're paying all that money, you should be able to wear whatever the fuck you want.
True. But
yeah, incredible stuff. Really good.
Yeah.
Loved it.
So now it's on everyone else's bucket list now as well.
It should be. If you're interested in food, then it's got to be your number one place to save up for, I think.
Yes.
Although there will be a trip to Core by Claire Smith coming up soon because I did get vouchers for there for my birthday.
That'd be amazing as well. Three star.
Three Michelin star. Yeah. So I've gone from a 2 to a 3.
Interesting to see how it compares. We'll talk about that on the podcast. See the differences.
Well, I said I've been to 1-3 already and I wasn't impressed with it. So we'll see what this one's like.
Cool. So then, yeah, obviously the birthday week ended with a massive party at your house, which was class. Catered for by Domino's.
Yeah, got a load of samosas in, load of sandwiches.
Oh, yeah, where'd you get the samosas from? They were unbelievable.
I can't remember the name of them now. It's a little place in the bottom end of Spark Hill.
Sweet Centre, wasn't it? Something Sweet Centre.
Sweet Mahal's or something, or was that where you got
yours? That's where I got mine.
It's a place just down from there.
Yeah.
The next one along, basically.
DM us, we'll tell you if you're looking for samosas. Veg samosas, they were unbelievable.
Yeah, and paneer wraps, they were great.
Yeah, paneer. I never had paneer wrap before.
Yeah, they were really nice.
Cool. Where else we've been eating with?
Oh, the lovely, lovely Sham and his Deadbeat Nights with his pop-ups there. They've been incredible.
So obviously you know about Deadbeats. We spoke about it before. Basically, Sham created our dream bar down in Sturchley. Heavy music, dark, edgy.
Good drinks.
Awesome drinks, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. And now he's just decided to stick on a load of pop-ups, just basically getting his mates down for a little cook-off.
Yeah, while he's figuring out what food he's going to put on, he's been doing pop-ups and you've been to nearly all of them, haven't you?
I've been to three. I missed Lap. We were both devastated we missed Lap. We couldn't make it.
We couldn't go to
Pork Vindaloo, that looked unreal.
Yeah, that's one dish I really wanted to eat.
And we're good. We missed OPM as well. That looked cool as well. Slinging
deep pan style, Chicago style pizzas.
Yeah.
Which so I do have a recipe book for, so I'm intending to make my own at some point.
No, we're in Birmingham's doing it, so we'd love to see it, in fairness.
Yeah. You can get plenty of Neapolitan style pizzas. I want some Chicago pizzas now.
But then the one we did go to, somewhere we've been meaning to go for forever. Everyone's raving about her food.
Yes, they've done loads of pop-ups and we've never been able to get to one, but we finally managed Ravine Rabbit,
unbelievable.
I can see what all the fuss is about.
Yes.
It's really, really good, isn't it?
Oh, man, so good. I mean, from start to finish, we just went in and ordered everything, obviously.
We literally went to the bar and says, if we ordered everything, is that too much? And they were like, not between you. And we were like, oh, fine, we'll order everything.
That's
then.
What we want then, everything. Start to finish, started with the ceviche and the Doritos.
What I like is every menu I see I do a pop-up, it's different. It's a different sort of, but there's still similar dishes like the crab muffin. That's been on every menu, I think.
Mate, there will be riots if they take that crab dish off. That is
one of the best
things I've ate in such a long time.
It was really, really nice.
So comforting. It's perfect. It's the best comfort food you'll ever eat.
It's one of them dishes, like first bite, you're like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Like, it was all incredible, but that was the standout. And the tomatoes.
Yeah.
I love good tomatoes anyway, but her tomato dish is crazy.
A tomato dish has no business being even mentioned in the same breath as, like, the best dish of the night, but that was one of the best dishes of the night with the chili crisp on it. Oh, man, that was insane. Everything she did, every dish was just fantastic.
Every dish they did was great.
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, obviously, two of the nicest people as well. Erin. Erin's like a rocket scientist. Just incredible. It was great to meet him as well. I finally met him. I never met him before.
If they can get their own place, it'll be amazing. They will.
And it'll be packed every night and we'll definitely be there.
Yeah, 100%.
We'll definitely be there.
What else? You did the...
I've done the next one then, which was with Matt. Everyone knows Matt. Absolutely brilliant bloke. Matt Wheeldon, doing amazing things down at Polly. And he was slinging wings and tacos. And, you know, I thought, who doesn't love wings and tacos? So I went down there. Oh, my God. Incredible.
Yeah, I went here. I was away. So I was good.
Southern fried chicken wings. They were nice. The peanut, there was a little peanut kind of salsa on the side, chili salsa. That was wicked.
You know me and wings, mate. I'm away.
And then the tacos. The beef was just the beefiest beef ever. Like slow cooked in beef fat, confit. Oh, insane, insane. And then the fish tacos. They were basically like mini fishes from the chippy, like massive mini fishes with light spice and nice spicy salsa. Everything was fresh and vibrant. He done just a really good job, really good job.
And then we got to the Cobico one.
And then we both went Cobico.
And that was great as well. We're just so like blessed in Birmingham. Like the pop-up scene seems to be as good as the restaurant scene at the moment.
People like Cobico and obviously Ravine Rabbit just kind of leading that charge as well. But the thing with Cobo is that I've ate there loads, I think, at least 3 times. And every time it just gets even better. Even
it gets different as well. Like every time I've had it, it's either been ramen or it's been dry ramen or it's been like the actual side sort of tapas-y style side dishes, just a load of them.
It's like he's getting more confidence every time. He's like, right, I'm going to have a go at this now and I'm going to blast this and bang, smashes it every time. The mackerel.
Yeah.
That was so good.
But yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks.
That has been an interesting few weeks.
Should give it a shout out as well, because the next one's not out till after it. Wingfest is coming up.
Yeah, Wingfest coming up. Always love Wingfest.
Saturday day is sold out, I think. So we're going the Friday night.
Yeah.
So yeah, give that a try, because last year's one was awesome.
Plan to eat my body weight in wings.
Well, now you're on the wing. Kilos. You're on the green wing boat now.
I'm on the wing boat. I'm mad for wings.
If you've been listening to us, you'd have heard Liam slagging wings off for years.
And then I'd bumped into Grady's.
And then you tried proper wings, you know, hello. And then you appreciate the absolute finesse in a wing. Are you going flats or drum, though? What's your favourite point? What?
I like the drums, to be honest.
You like the drum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the flats.
Do you? Still a bit of faff on the flats.
Yeah, but I think you get... It sounds daft. I think you get more meat on the flats. And if you can do it right and pull out the one thinner bone, then you can just get the other one straight down in one go.
But then if you go to Gert's, you don't need to. There's just so much meat. I don't... Genetically modified friggin' chickens. They're huge.
I've got to try this one. I've seen your pictures and they just look like an actual chicken leg.
They were fantastic. Yeah, so as you can hear, we've been real busy. So... After this episode today, we are going to have a little break. We're going to have most of August off. We're going on holidays and stuff. And then we're back with something really exciting in September. So Birmingham's launching their food system strategy. That's just going to be a massive thing. It's come down from the Department of Public Health of Birmingham. They've kind of launched this massive initiative. So I'll read you the vision, because I think the vision kind of sums up best exactly what the strategy is all about. It's to create a fair, sustainable and prosperous food system and economy where food items are nutritious, affordable and desirable so everyone can thrive. I think that's just a really nice way of summing up what the system's about. So we're going to dedicate a few episodes to that. Today's episode touches on it a little bit. You'll see why. And then our next episode is with Dr. Justin Varney. And he is
Head of Public Health.
Yeah, Director of Public Health for Birmingham Council. Massive episode. We recorded it up in the council house in Brum. It's a massive task. It feels a little overwhelming, but we're here to kind of bring it down, filter it down to kind of just everybody, because it's for the whole city. If we can all believe in it, we will come out the other end with a better food system in our city. So that's what our aim is to do. So today's episode, we're with Andy, Urban Herbs. I mean, just an absolute... cool dude, like massively into his horticultural Just been growing these mad herbs for a long time, going around farmer's market, plodding along, doing his thing. And then all of a sudden, he just blew up. Like, you know, he's got a mad passion.
Oh, he's so into it. And he, like, you can see the passion just oozes through his work. And the different types of herbs he's got. And, like, all the chefs in the city, everyone knows who he is. Like, yeah. Everyone uses him. And he always brings stuff to people's attention that even some of the top chefs haven't heard of these little herbs. And he, like, just brings them in and shows you what to do with them and how to grow them. And that's it. He's not just selling herbs. He's selling them for you to grow at home.
Yeah. And he's interested in you actually grow them. And it's not like you buy these herbs, go home, that's it, you're on your own. Good luck. He's on the other end of Instagram. He's answering. It sounds like his full-time job, just answering emails and Instagram messages, yeah. Just trying to help people grow. So then that kind of led to his other passion, which is he believes that everybody can grow food, no matter where you live, no matter how big your gardens are. Even if you have a little balcony and a couple of pots, you can fill them with herbs and veg. Everyone should have a go at just growing something. And that's a massive passion of his. I mean, go and see, what's his Insta called? Andy Grows Herbs. Go and have a look at that and just see what he's doing in the front garden of his ex-council house in Raleigh Regis.
There'll be links from his Urban Herb site as well.
Yeah, and we'll put all links, obviously, in this show notes, but it's definitely worth going and checking out. He's on that mission. And then as part of the food strategy, they've gave a bit of funding down to these local food legends. So they've received some grant for that, and they're actually going around schools and teaching kids how to grow herbs and creating little herb gardens around little inner city schools around Birmingham. And
it's unbelievable.
Yeah. So really important episode. Really great guy. I hope you really enjoy this episode.
Falling asleep. I am genuinely. I'm like, it's nice and cozy, isn't it?
It's nice.
Nice and peaceful.
Yeah, we could just good come here just for a nap.
It never used to be there. Never, like, before the security and that came in, you could hear like raves going on down the hall and stuff.
Not so much in the room. You open the door and you'd hear like crazy, like brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Heavy jungle. You're outside the door. Yeah, man. If I can get in there, be awesome.
Anyway, Andrew, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm doing really good. You know, you're catching me at the right end of the season.
Yeah.
Because this is the time of year where it's still nice growing conditions, but things have calmed down a bit for me and my work. So I get to do the things that I want to do, such as doing your podcast.
That's so perfect.
If we asked you a few months ago, you'd be in no chance.
Do you know what? When you work with anything where it's involving growing things, as soon as spring arrives, your workload just goes to 90, 100 hours a week. It's not even a job. Mm. It's literally, genuinely, it's like a farming lifestyle that we joke and we say that, you know, as soon as the daylight hours get longer, that's basically my working hours. That's my hours sheet, you know, on the weather app when it says, what time does the sun come up?
Yeah.
It's true.
So we look forward to that, but you're a bit like, fucking hell. It comes a graph.
Do you know something? You genuinely lose your life for the season. Mm. And I used to really resent that. I genuinely used to resent it until you realise it's going to end soon. And then you start worrying. You go, where's it gone? Do you know what? I mean, a lot of my family, you know, come from like a farming background. And I never really understood what that meant until you're literally waking up at 4 a.m. and you start looking at the weather app and you start stressing about rain and sun and temperature. But I love it. Because, you know, I do live in, you know, in the city, basically. And how many people in the city has that interaction with the seasons? I don't think that many people do.
No, definitely not. No. I mean, I'm quite lucky. My dad lives over in Ireland on a farm. So I can get to take my daughter there. But if I didn't show her, like, the sheep, we normally go lambing season and say, look at that little lamb. Eventually, that lamb could be on my plate. Your meat doesn't come cellophane wrapped like it does in a supermarket. It's an actual living, breathing thing that somebody who really cares about it, like my uncle, will look after and give a great life to until it meets its demise. But it, like you said, in this city, that's rare for people to kind of understand.
Well, we're going to get to this a bit later, right? I'm jumping the script a little bit. I'm joking. There's no script.
Yeah, we're not that prepared.
Yeah.
But one of my little side hustles at the minute is that myself and my wife, we've started up a non-profit, like a community interest company, where we're going into primary schools and we're teaching kids about growing. And you guys know, you know, kids are just off the wall. Like, they come out with some absolute crazy shit. Like,
yeah,
it's brilliant. Like, literally, I do a couple of hours working with them and it's like, I feel re-energized.
Yeah.
And I wasn't actually there. I didn't actually hear it. But we've been working with a school in Birmingham that's got a lot of kids from all different backgrounds that come from all around the world. And the one thing that seems to sort of just, they've all got in common is they all like food. Mm. And it's making that link between growing things and food. But anyway, this kid, he comes out to the growing space. And he looks at, we've got some trellis with all beans growing up and some salad growing. And he looked at this and he turned around to my wife and he said, Miss, he went, is this where McDonald's get it from?
You is.
You know, you're like, kind of.
Yeah.
And then the second question was, he goes, oh, it looks really real. He goes, is it plastic? And seriously, there wasn't that link.
No. Like, they couldn't conceive that that's where your vegetables and your fruit and everything comes from. It's mental, that is.
Have they give you any good ideas as well? Because kids come out with some random shit, and every now and again, my daughter comes out with something. I'm like, you know, I never would have thought about that, but that's a good idea.
I mean, this school got me in a couple of years ago. They got me in to do this garden design. So we got the school to, as part of the art class, to design a herb garden. And they've got a lot of kids from all different areas of the world. Some of them have been in war zones and stuff. And all these kids are doing designs of a herb garden. And you know, some of them, there's literally like stick men, and it's literally crayon, and you're like, you can't work out quite what's going on. And some of them were literally like architect drawings. Genuinely, some of them were like to scale, and they were like pastel colours and all this. I mean, my favourite one was me talking to this girl saying like, oh, you know, so you've got your mint plants there, you've got your thyme plants, yet. Yeah. What's that? And she's like, oh, it's a roller coaster.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be?
And I was like, okay.
Love that in my garden.
I said, I don't think the school caretaker's going to be that up for building one of them. And she was like, yeah. She went, but it's the journey. She went, it's the spiral down into the middle of the garden. And I was like, okay. You know, when you're like, this has just jumped from like year five art class to something quite philosophical.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love what we've been doing with the kids, to be fair. People say to me, a lot of people have said like, oh, you know, it's really nice. It's really good that you're doing that. And I keep literally saying like, no, it's just, it's a proper laugh, to be honest. Genuinely, it's a proper laugh.
So you're not doing it just for the good of anything. You're just doing it because you love it.
Yeah,
you're being selfish. Everyone thinks you're being being generous with your time. Nah, you're just being selfish. You just love it.
Yeah, and do you
keeps
know,
you entertained.
we had a meeting with a lot of schools, you know, about working with them, and so far it's mainly primary schools. But one of the funniest sessions that we've had so far was where we were talking to some older kids, and they seem to know more about growing things than I do. And it just took me a while to work out why.
I was going to say, you know, if they ever legalise cannabis, and you've already got the best weed company name.
Yeah, brand name.
Yeah. Urban Herbs, obviously.
Yeah. I mean,
have you got that trademark? No one else can use that.
Not yet, at the time of recording.
We do now.
Yeah, I'll get it done, yeah.
Because, I mean, to be fair, it sounds like a joke, but literally, that was a conscious decision, really. We wanted, you know, the company to be different to everything else that's out there. Because, you know, I work in a very, very traditional sector. Mm. You know, I always joke and say that sometimes in horticulture, you know, you might get a phone call 3 days before a delivery. And that to them is like the equivalent of Amazon. You know, they're like, well, we like to let you know when it's coming. It's like, okay. You know, if you used to send like a text message and say, you're 3 pallets of compost is on the way, that'd be like Star Trek, you know, genuinely. And it is a generational thing. Mm. Because, you know, this is one of the things that I'm really passionate about talking about, that okay, it's the same in many, many industries, it's the same in many trades, that there aren't enough young people going into that trade. Mm. And I think that's very true within horticulture, that there isn't enough young people going into horticulture at the entry level. And it frustrates me, to be honest, because there are so many opportunities now. Mm. You know, for all the rights and wrongs, and believe me, there's a lot of wrongs to all the stuff that's happened with Brexit, and it's much more difficult now to bring plants into the UK. But I am very much like, you know, glass half full. And I look at this and I go, you know, you have the work ethic and you've got the ambition and you want to do it. There's so many opportunities now for somebody to get involved and start growing things on a commercial level, especially with edibles. You know, during lockdown, everybody got into growing things. Everybody got interested in growing their own food. And with the current cost of living crisis, I can't see that going away.
Why do you think that is, that there's so little amount of people getting into to it?
I think a lot of it's to do with lack of knowledge, lack of inspiration, mentoring, because sometimes it's the soft skills. It's things that you can't learn from watching a YouTube video or reading a book. Sometimes you need that older mentor to kind of talk you through something. And I think it's the same in chefing. I think it's the same in the food industry, that it's just that quiet word. It's just that little, nothing that you can put your finger on, just a quiet word here and there to say, have you thought about doing that? Or if you compared these two things, I think that would work a bit better. You know, just those little friendly nudges. And I've been lucky, to be honest, because, you know, there's one or two people within my industry that have offered me that advice over the years. And that's been invaluable. And you've got to remember as well, you know, you ask me, why is there not a lot of people coming into it? Well, it is a really hard game. And I think it's important to spell out why it's hard, because really, you know, if you open a restaurant and, you know, you have a bad Friday night, you can have another go on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And the following week, you get another Friday night and you can nail it.
Yeah.
In horticulture, it's not quite like that, because I always say to people, you only ever get one chance at doing the 1st of April. I appreciate I just picked out April Fool's Day there, but you get what I mean? You only get one opportunity to do spring every year, and that's where you do your money. That's where you have to do your business. So it's very unforgiving, you know, because if you don't get it right the first year, it's going to be then 12 months until you can earn.
So just to dumb it down for like people like me who know nothing about this, like why the 1st of April, why is that so important?
Well, every year there's a point where like spring arrives.
Yeah.
There's a point where you wake up on a Saturday morning and there's a bit of blue sky, and we all do it. Even if you've got zero interest in gardening, and we kind of look out the window and we go, oh, you know, I don't have to wear my coat out today, or, you know, I fancy going for a walk in the park. But if you are into gardening, then that's the point where you go, do you know what? I'm up for it this year. You know, this is the year that I'm going to nail my garden, you know. And I find this actually, it probably comes a bit earlier than that, that as soon as Christmas is out of the way, everybody starts thinking, right, this year I'm going to have a growing space. This year I'm going to be self-sufficient, you know. This year, I'm going to turn my back garden into an allotment. And it's that optimism. It's about psychology that I think you get to a point where you've had enough of winter and you're like, let's look forward. And, you know, that's the point where, you know, if you're in the industry where you want to sell plants, that's where you have to sell plants. You know, that's the time where you're going to sell them.
Oh, I see what you mean. When do you plant all year round? Or is
I was going to say, what's your average year? What if you take January to December, what's all your average season? What do you do, like... What's the outlay?
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, if we start, let's say we start the end. So the season ends for us in terms of selling sort of October-ish, and then I get to put my feet up and we get to watch box sets and we get to eat food, because me and my missus, we are massive foodies. And so, you know, when the dark night, you light the fire, put something on TV, just brilliant. So October, November, December, that's kind of like, or it definitely used to be like my chill time, my downtime. And then basically 1st of January, that's it, game on. You're getting ready for the season. So, you know, when I say getting ready, it's a glamorous way of saying it's just cleaning polytunnels and getting pots filled with soil. And all the time, you know, if you're overwintering plants, you're looking after them over the winter, just in the background. And then for us, we reopen our online store, normally the first week of March. So, you know, we advertise it, we build it up, and the first week of March is just mayhem. You know, I mean, we are a relatively small business. You know, it's myself and my wife full time, and my mom works for us as well now. And then it's just, you know how it is with family businesses. Like that first week of March, literally everybody in my phone book is just over and helping us pack orders. We work with a company who packs all our orders for us. There's a warehouse over by Birmingham Airport. So we literally ship all the orders over there. And when I say all the orders, I mean, we're talking thousands of orders every week. That first week, it was so full on. And from that point on, from March to about June, it's like just rinse and repeat. every week, you know, you're potting up young plants, getting them growing, you're sending out the ones that are ready. It's like a constant cycle where you, basically as soon as one of our polytunnels gets a bit empty, you fill it up again. It's like go, 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 and off you go again.
Yeah.
And it's such a buzz, to be honest with you, because I don't think people realise it. You know, so, I mean, we do so much on social media. Like, my life is on social media because it's not just selling plants, it's promoting and it's selling the lifestyle, I think. You know, it's sort of promoting, like, the fact that you can grow your own flavour, you can grow your own food, but also, like, the mental health benefits of growing things. So I live my life on social media. That's, you know, throughout the year. But if you can imagine, when you're sending out thousands of orders every week and your phone just blows up with notifications and it's people who are really happy, you know, with their plants arriving and people are meeting them for the first time. So we grow varieties like strawberry mint or blackcurrant sage, lime mint. Well, there's a plant called cola plant.
Oh, I seen this on your thing the other day.
Which is, it's bizarre. I mean, it literally is cola flavour. So, you know, you can get like a cola rub.
Yeah.
We was at the Good Food Show recently and all the chefs were coming around and they were saying that you can get a cola rub to put on gammon. That's the flavour that you get within this plant. And so it's really unusual stuff. It's really cool stuff. And when you get all these notifications from people, I'm not going to lie to you, it is a buzz. It's an absolute just legal high. Because, you know, when you love something,
yeah.
But then, let's be honest, if you've picked over like a couple of thousand orders, you probably don't love it as much like when you've been doing it for like 19 hours a day. But then your phone blows up and it's people going, oh my God, these are amazing. So you then get happy from other people's reactions. So where did I get up to in the year? About June.
June, yeah.
Yeah, that's where we are.
So we get to June. I'm falling down. The pretty much the climax of our season is every year we do BBC Good Food Show at the NEC, which is a big deal for us because that is, you know, it's a big food show and it's in our home city and I love that. And then for me, I joked about it at the beginning, but like July, August, September, that for me, it's a really fun time of year because we're still selling, we're still busy, but I've got time to think and I get to do all the stuff that I want to do, not just stuff that I have to do. So we get to reach out to people like yourselves and we get to do these collaborations and we get to talk to people and do these kind of, we basically just get to do cool stuff and that's what I love. So then we get to October. I'm absolutely knackered by this point.
I'm knackered listening about it.
I close the online store and then it's just rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Although I say that, we were joking about horticulture, about my industry being a bit old-fashioned and all this. I think one of the reasons for that, it is very much there's a temptation to sort of stay in your lane, you know, just to do the same thing. I guess very much like a restaurant that's got a really, really good menu. You don't want to change it. Because you know it's a winner. So you don't change the signage, you don't change the menus, you don't change the lighting, everything. You just want it to stay the same. But, you know, for me, it's about evolving. It's about trying to do a couple of different things every year. And some of the stuff we've got lined up for the next 12 months is just off the wall.
How'd you come up with, like, the mad stuff, you know, like the cola flavoured and the strawberry mint, no, pineapple mint, was it? Pineapple mint. How'd you come up with that? Did you just pull it out of a box or did you try it on a small batch and then... Oh, that was really good, actually. Let's do more. Or have they always been out there and I've just never heard of them? Or is it something you do uniquely?
So they are existing varieties, but these are varieties that, you know, they are being crossbred all the time. So we don't do that, but we're very much, you know, just constantly hunting for those new flavours.
So you're like, oh, I'm only interested in the kind of weird, interesting stuff.
One of our suppliers has genuinely got a spreadsheet. I've seen it. And at the top of the spreadsheet, it says Urban Herbs Weird Shit. Right. And as soon as they hear about a new variety that they think is down our street, they'll send an email because they know that that's not sort of stuff that anybody else will be interested in.
No. And these are all usable herbs, like the cola herb. What would you use the cola herb for? What would that go in?
Well, I mean, it genuinely gives you a vivid, like, cola flavour. So you can use it as a rub, so nice on gammon. But you can put it in water as well. So even if you just use it to season, like still water, or ice water, it is really, really like refreshing flavour. It's such a strong, you know, but this is one of the things about what I do. For a long time, we used to work at food festivals. So before COVID, we used to travel around and we'd do all these food festivals, sometimes do three food festivals every weekend. And there'd be so many chefs and street food people that would interact with our products. And you guys know, like, you know, chefs, as soon as they see something a bit weird, a bit unusual, it's like a moth to a flame, isn't it? They are drawn to it. Yeah. And so at these food festivals, like, all these chefs used to come around our stand. But what was cool about it is that I learned as much from them as they did from me. Somebody doing Thai street food once picked out lime mint that we do. And she chopped that up and put it into a Thai curry. You know, and that's a pairing that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of. You know, for me, like lime mint, I'm just thinking herbal tea and cocktails, basically.
Yeah.
And she instantly, because that's her sector, straight away, she highlighted that as being, that's what we've got to do. And I think that's really cool. Do you know what, as well? You know, we're recording this in Birmingham, and we know Birmingham, you know, is a very multicultural place. You know, it gets more multicultural by the minute. Mm. And there's so many different food heritages and food backgrounds, which I think is really cool, because I don't necessarily see that reflected in my industry. But, like, my customers are so diverse. Like, you know, the recipes that they will suggest, maybe from their own food heritage, their own background, the stuff that I've never heard of. And that's what I love, because people, like, it's almost sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
And we get that knowledge from the customers, and then we're able to then pass that on through social media. So really what I'm saying is when we put clever stuff on social media, I'm just repeating what other people have told me.
Do you ever think, when you get offered something from the supplier, do you ever think, oh, actually that would make this would be good for this kind of dish? Or is that in the back of your mind when you're choosing herbs? Or
yeah, because we pair everything on the website. So on our website, you'll see we actually do like collections of plants.
Yeah.
So we do like a boozy herb collection. We do a herbal tea collection, a stir fry collection, maybe like blackcurrant sage. When I first met blackcurrant sage, straight away I was thinking cocktails.
Yeah.
And lime mint, strawberry mint. I got married a few years ago and we grew a load of lime mint and a load of strawberry mint because somebody thought it'd be a good idea to put that in the PIMS at the wedding. And it kind of was a good idea, except that nobody can remember anything about what happened after about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But the thing is, it's like, you know, stories like that.
Yeah.
That's why I love what I do, because it's not right traditional gardening. You know, I always think that when you're trying to sell a product and thinking about it, what is my product? I guess I'm selling herb plants, basically, but I'm also selling the idea that actually you can grow things, and that actually growing things, it's beneficial to you, and it actually opens up possibilities, because it's kind of like a circular process that I think if you're growing something, you're very likely to use it, and then you're going to experiment, you're going to try new flavors. So I think, you know, to answer your question in a very, very circular way, including stories about my wedding, I think when I look at a new variety, straight away I start kind of like going through my mind, thinking about what other people have said to me, what street food chefs have said to me, what chefs have said to me, or producers. For example, at BBC Good Food Show, drinks producers, people who do small batches of quite unique liqueurs and stuff, they've come to our stand and they've recommended stuff. So I think that's the cool thing about the world that we work in. It is very collaborative, you know? So it's not just those soft nudges from growers. It's soft nudges from foodies, soft nudges from chefs.
Do you have a lot of customers that are restaurants and bars and things like that?
In terms of selling like wholesale, not too much really. But I know that a lot of chefs, they love our product. They absolutely love our product. And it's been a random sort of like, I've been doing this for more than a decade now. And over that time, things have changed big time. I think probably 10 years ago, it would have been very unusual for a restaurant to think about growing their own flavor, growing their own herbs in significant quantities. But now I think, you know, if you're a serious restaurant, if you're kind of like trying to find that unique slant, especially if you're heading in Michelin star directions, I think being able to say that you forage ingredients, that you grow your own ingredients, I think that's quite a unique selling point. And so it's a lot more common now.
Yeah. I mean, what better way to connect to the environment around you than foraging, you know? You see it more with David Taylor, Grace and Savor, massive into it. You can see he's out, got the lads out going, getting the wild garlic, and they're off getting the blossom kind of thing, elderflower.
Mm-hmm.
you know, when it's wild garlic season, because everyone's like, where's you got a good patch, this year? I mean, we know where there's a really good patch for wild, more than we could ever pick. We've told a few chefs about it and they go down there now.
I think it's interesting because the food scene has changed so much. And I think, you know, I've always been a foodie and, you know, myself and my wife, we're not huge drinkers, but our vice, everybody's got, I'm a big believer that everybody should have at least one vice. And ours is we just love nice food.
Yeah.
You know, you love spending a few quid in a nice restaurant. And we've noticed that, you know, especially the last sort of 10 years, there's been an explosion in, you know, restaurants looking for that unique slant. And I think that unique slant is increasingly kind of the grow your own aspect. There was actually a bar down in London who was having a load of stuff off us, unusual mint plant. And they were actually, they actually went to the trouble of setting up a hydroponic setup behind the bar. So they literally had the mint plants in, it was like a clear hydroponics. So you could see the sort of hydroponics actually as they're making the cocktails. And they just snip a few leaves, put it in a cocktail. So it was like a living bar.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a long way of saying that's how they justified selling cocktails at 46 quid each.
Yeah, probably.
When somebody buys these plants, can they cultivate them and harvest them all year round? Or? Yeah.
And that, I suppose that's the unique selling point about what we do. When you buy a plant from a kind of generic garden centre or whatever, really, that's it. Best of luck. See you again in 2 weeks when it dies kind of thing.
1 week in my ass, mate. 1 week.
I think with us, it's more of an ongoing relationship with the customer. So when you get that plant home, you're not on your own. You know, if you get it home, you don't know what to do with it, you can literally send me a message and I will give the best advice that I can. Also, you know, the thing that people don't necessarily tell you, that not all plants are as easy to grow as others. Like basil is a pain to grow. If you're in the UK, basil is a pain to grow. Coriander, pain to grow.
Why would that be? Just the lack of sunlight? Or
so coriander is an annual. So it's only meant to last one season.
Okay.
And it'll go to seed. So the plant will grow and then it'll come to a point in its life where, because it's an annual, its way of kind of procreating and going on in life is that it must produce seed to self-seed itself. The problem is that once the plant goes to seed, that's starting, you know, you're approaching the beginning of the end, really. It's putting all its energy into seed production, not into leaf.
Yeah.
So what I always say to people is that it's important to be honest and actually say that, you know, if you're planning your herb garden from scratch, think about it in terms of structure. So you're going to have the evergreen herbs, things that are there all year round. So I'm thinking rosemary, thyme, sage, oregano. They're evergreen. They're going to be there all year round. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of like your skyscrapers. Those are your structural things. You put them in your garden, leave some gaps in between. There's other varieties like mint that you know is going to come back every year. That's going to die down to the ground in the winter. It's going to come back up. But then if we're going back to our difficult friend, coriander, you know, that's a, well, it's not even, it's kind of like a guest star. It's a firework. You know, you plant it, it grows for however many weeks, and then that's it. So it's not as easy to grow as something like rosemary, you know, unless you, you know, if you, I suppose in terms of the amount of hours, the amount of commitment that you're going to put into it. So if you want coriander, just out of interest, do you guys like coriander as a flavour?
Yeah. I do, yeah, I really like it.
It's one of them things, isn't it? People either like it or they don't.
It's
got that kind of, some people say it tastes like washing liquid.
Well, apparently, there's been some research done into this, that back in the primeval world, there was two different splits of evolution. And apparently, human beings, you know, there's two different dominant genes. And one set of people had this gene that wasn't quite as attuned to detecting certain toxicity, and unfortunately that's the three of us because why are we not surprised, because that's coriander, and whereas my wife, she can't stand
Maria's the same. Even if this, like, if I've used the same knife to cut coriander and then use that knife for something else in the dish, she's like, oh, coriander.
And that's because, you know, both both of them will be detecting sort of slightly increased, like it's like a false alarm for toxicity. It just turns out that it wasn't that important in the evolution, so it just, it stayed around. I always say to people that if you like, as you two are coriander lovers like me, and I've just said coriander isn't easy to grow, well, what are we going to do? Well, I would grow an easier alternative. So at Urban Herbs, like, we stock a variety called Vietnamese coriander.
Okay.
Vietnamese coriander is a perennial, which doesn't go to seed. So straight away, it's easier to grow than normal coriander. And flavour-wise, yeah, you see, that's what matters, isn't it? It's all about the flavour.
Does it taste like it, though?
Yeah, you still get that bit of coriander flavour. It's a bit lemony, it's a bit spicy. And I started growing Vietnamese coriander as a marriage of convenience. I started growing it just because it was easier to grow.
Yeah.
Then somewhere along the way, I fell in love with the flavour. The same could be said of basil. You know, basil's quite difficult to grow. It's relatively short-lived. It doesn't like cold conditions, which is a shame, really, isn't it? Because in the UK, winter lasts for 8 months.
Yeah.
So instead, I would grow a variety called basil mint. Mm. And that's a crossbred variety, but it grows like mint and it tastes like basil.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that? I mean, you know, it's literally a basil flavour that you can harvest by the handful.
That's crazy. This might be sacrilege.
Go on.
But don't hate me. Could you dry out the coriander and then use it like a dried herb, store it properly? And yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. And, you know, actually drying herbs, it's interesting because I've tried it a lot over the years.
Mm.
And it's weird how sometimes the flavour doesn't quite stay around.
It's kind of the same though. When you get it in the jar, it's not the same flavour.
It baffles me how sometimes the flavour intensifies when you dry it. A few years ago, myself and a friend on the street food market, we had this brilliant idea. And that was that, do you remember there was a bit of a phase where there was chili festivals everywhere?
Yeah.
And chili eating competitions. And me and this friend, we actually set up a company called the Birmingham Chili Company. And it wasn't really very well thought out, to be honest, that we were going to grow all the super hot chilies. Because back then, I'm sure actually that anybody listening to this will relate that, you know, the price of like Scotch bonnets, if you're buying them wholesale, they've gone through the roof. They've absolutely gone through the roof. You know, and the price has been climbing for a long time. But especially, you know, the very super hot chilies, so like Nagas, Carolina Reapers, the Trinidad Scorpion, they really, really like command a really good market value. So we had this brilliant idea that we were going to grow all these super hot chilies. And this friend of mine, he was actually running a company making preserves. And so we thought, right, this is a dovetail. This is, you know, I can supply him and we'll make loads of money. Turns out not that many people are stupid enough to actually eat Trinidad Scorpions. It's a very, very niche kind of market. I mean, I'm one of those stupid people who loves eating really spicy chilies.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, I don't know what it is. It is sadomasochistic. One of my lockdown hobbies was actually using these chilies to make chili jam.
I like a chili jam.
Have you ever tried making chili jam?
Nah, but it burns your eyes out, doesn't it?
I mean, I followed the recipe to the letter. So it's there going in the saucepan. I've added all the, it was Carolina Reaper. And then it said to leave it to stew in the saucepan for about 45 minutes. So I left it simmering, went outside to do some work. And when I came back in, it was like a riot. You know, when people have sprayed tear gas. I genuinely couldn't even go in the kitchen.
It's that bad.
But, you know, this is kind of where I'm coming from, really. That there are some things that are easier to grow than others. There's other things that, you know, actually command a market value. So this is going back again to some of the opportunities that I think there's a real gap for actually like more restaurants to actually set up a little growing space. Because how cool would that be when you think about it? If restaurants actually like set up a little dedicated growing space, maybe using hydroponics, maybe using grow lights to grow things like the super hot chilies, I'd go there.
Yeah, I'd be there. Well, there's that many people making hot sauce as well and stuff now. And
yeah,
all the fermented, like, there's a hot sauce festival we went to, and I went straight up to the hot, we found the hottest one, was like, right, I'll try this one. And Liam will tell you what I was like. It was like someone had shot me in the back of the head. Like, it was ridiculous.
I was trying to help you out, but I was laughing so hard I could barely breathe.
It was genuinely painful. And you know what? I'd do it again. And there was no pleasure to be gained from it the first time.
I'm exactly the same. And you know what? A bit of a shout out. You know, we're from Birmingham, and shout out to one of my favourite producers, a business called Pip's Hot Sauce.
Yeah, we love Pip's. I went there the other day. I was at Kingsleaf Market, and I bought, I think, 5 or 6 different sauces.
There's a one that she does called Nagatropolis.
Yes.
The best.
The best one.
You can't actually beat it.
No.
Because the flavour is so, so good. But I suppose as well, thinking about it, maybe we're back to this thing again, that the missing element is the confidence and the knowledge. Because I think maybe a lot of chefs who have got really innovative ideas and such like, I don't know, maybe they're lacking the confidence or the knowledge to actually have a go at doing these things.
What a time.
All the time.
What
yeah,
a time.
Yeah. I hear chefs have loads of time on their hands.
Yeah, I think that could definitely be it. There's the time. Although some of them tried, and I think Brad's got a little bit of an allotment space behind Carter's. Mm. Obviously, we spoke about Dave and Grayson Saver.
And they all do foraging. I don't know any of the top chefs that don't send people out to forage. Like, if it's there for free, just fucking have it, you know what I mean?
Bringing us back to my very original point was, you said, once somebody buys off you, that's not the end of the journey. They can come to you for tips. What tips would you give to someone who's sitting at home now trying to grow their herbs and panicking because it's not going to plan? Do you have any kind of general ones that you can share? Or
I think, honestly, it would just be realistic. And not beat yourself up. Do you know what I mean? Being honest with you, I think so much of what I do, the industry that I work in, it's about optimism. And it's about saying, you are going to buy these plants, you're going to buy this pot, you're going to buy this raised bed, and then you're going to be self-sufficient. And I think it's really important to be realistic and say to people, if you buy this pot of French tarragon from Urban Herbs for £3.50, I think that when you buy tarragon now in a little packet from the supermarket, if you use that plant three times, you're probably breaking even just about. And then every time you use your plant after that, you're saving yourself a pound. So I'd be really realistic and sort of say to people, well, don't beat yourself up. You know, if things don't work out and they don't last forever more, well, as long as you are saving yourself money and you're enjoying yourself. And also maybe it's actually encouraging you to cook different things. During lockdown, so many people reached out to me. You know, like people living in like one bedroom studio apartments, literally on their own. And they said to me that literally the only thing keeping them going. So I didn't know at the time, you know, we were just sending out plans. Yeah. People were reaching out to me and saying like, literally, like I'm living on my own. I've got no reason to get out of bed. But then I'm looking at the windowsill and going, well, if I don't water the plants, they'll die. So I might as well do that. And then like 15 minutes later, it's, well, I suppose I could use that tarragon, you know, make myself some eggs or something for breakfast, you know, or I'll do that. And before you know it, it's actually giving you that little bit of impetus to actually get up and do something. So these things, they have a powerful effect. You know, I often talk about the monetary side of things. You know, I always talk, I've just said it now, you know, the idea that you can save yourself a pound every time you use your tarragon plant. But I think during lockdown, it was saving a lot of people a lot more than a pound a time. You know, I think it was having a real effect on people's mental health.
Plants in general just have that effect. They've just... It sounds daft. They're super powerful with what they are. Just recently, I was telling you before this, we've had loads of work done in our garden. We've got a big mound of all different plants, and there's lots of herbs. There's thyme, there's rosemary, there's all these different types of things. And just watering it, alone, just watering it, just the different noise of it on each plant. It sounds different on each one. And it's just something so relaxing about, oh, I know I'm watering the rosemary now because it sounds like this. And it's just, I can't describe it. It's a really odd, really odd feeling.
So one of my customers works in psychology, that there's this theory, and I think I'm doing this justice, that we live most of our lives in the front cortex of our brain. And that's the part of our brain that deals with logic and reason and worrying about editing podcasts and sensible things. And then he was saying to me that when you like smell something, when you touch the foliage, it's a different sense or a, let's say the aroma of, say, rosemary. When you actually get that aroma, that takes you away from your front cortex. It accesses the rear cortex in your brain. And that's the part that deals with smell. And that's why, you know, when people have suffered memory loss or something like that, apparently, you know, smell is very, very powerful in terms of restoring memory because it goes straight to that rear cortex of your brain. I think this is why I genuinely love my job, because I'm surrounded by that all the time. I know earlier I was moaning, I was saying, like, you know, when I get up at 4 a.m. and start work. But actually, I think it's all about engaging that part of your brain. I think it's all about being away from that front cortex, because we live in a society where, for most people, their interaction with the seasons is when they walk from the front door to the car. You know, that's it. Because you can get food all year round. You know, you can get, it doesn't matter about seasonality, you can get food in the supermarket, whatever you want. And I actually think that it's quite powerful, actually engaging with the seasons and actually going, well, this time of year, you know, you're cold. Mm. When you're working outside, you're cold. Or, you know, as it's been happening the last few days, you know, you just get drenched. But it kind of makes you feel alive. It makes you feel engaged. Mm. And that goes back to the food as well. that I think if you're eating seasonally, you know, I don't know if there is evidence to support this, but it makes me feel better because you sort of feel like you are actually earthing yourself. I suppose in a way you're adding natural variety to your diet, because if you're actually, the variety I just mentioned, Vietnamese coriander, generally speaking, you won't be harvesting that, say, from October, November through to about March. But what that means is when it comes back and I start using that again, I get excited about it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there is something about it. Like Jersey Royals. I'm mad for Jersey Royals. And as soon as they come into season, I'm like, right, here we go. That's all we're having with every meal.
Yeah, it's something we've definitely lost touch with. I think living in a city as well, that doesn't really help. It comes back to that. I feel like when you go out to the villages and out into the countryside, they're better in tune with seasons, time of year, small changes, seasonality.
And I think as well that something that I'm really, really passionate about is actually talking about that supply side of things, because we are living through some mad times, you know. Like, it just seems like there's one crisis after another and there's one emergency after another. Earlier this year, depending on where you're listening to this podcast in the world, you may or may not know that there was actually rationing in UK supermarkets of fresh fruit and veg. Mm. And where I live, you know, I live in a very down-to-earth area where people are on tight incomes. And when the price of fruit and veg is going through the roof and there's rationing of fresh fruit and veg, and let's say you're on a budget and you're going around the supermarket, you're choosing what to go for. Well, it doesn't really matter what's in season. You're going to go for the cheapest processed food that you can get.
Yeah.
Because you have to make those hard choices. If you've got four kids, it's, you know, to be honest, it takes a lot of those bags of salad, doesn't it, to keep four kids going.
Mm. If you can get the kids to eat the salad in the first place. Yeah.
This is true. But this year, you know, I mean, everybody always said to me, you shouldn't go on social media when you're angry or when you're upset or emotional. But basically in the end of January this year, that's exactly what I did. I went on Instagram and I just basically had a little bit of a rant to screen, because I basically said, you know, I work in an industry where it's this idea that you know, anybody can grow things, anybody can be self-sufficient. Then it's like, you know, one of those little terms and conditions. Mm. As long as you've got basically loads and loads of time, free time to just work on growing all the time. As long as you've got a field that you can use free of charge. As long as you've got a huge greenhouse. And I really, really powerfully believe that actually growing your own food, it belongs in down-to-earth areas. You know, I think that people now, okay, I didn't think this maybe 5 years ago, but now with the rising cost of food, I think it makes sense to grow your own. I think it makes sense to grow expensive ingredients in small quantities. And so I went on Instagram and basically I said all this to camera and I said, right, I'm literally making it up on the spot. I said, you know, we live in a former council house and it's got a small front garden. And I said, right, I am going to dig up my tiny front garden and just turn it into a food growing space. And I'm going to do it like a game to prove a point. So I'm going to measure how much I've spent and I'm going to measure the supermarket value of the food I've harvested from it over the course of 12 months to see if it breaks even.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because I got a real backlash.
A backlash?
Backlash, yeah. So many people got in touch saying this can't be done. So many people got in touch saying, it won't work. You can never, you know, it's going to cost hundreds of pounds to do this. And I thought that was really interesting. Mm. I thought maybe I'd like touched on something that there is almost maybe like an income divide thing that I actually believe that if you're on a low income, you know, actually looking at the cost of, you know, I mentioned how many of those bags of salad you'd need to keep your kids fit. Yeah. Maybe I'm just being nostalgic, but I reckon about 3 years ago, those bags of salad were about 50 pence.
Yeah.
I feel like they were. Maybe they were never that cheap.
I've got the same feeling. I remember them being very cheap.
And just before I did my rant on Instagram, my wife actually, she fell down the stairs around that time. So she broke her leg. So for the first time in about 10 years, I had to do all the supermarket shopping. And I was going around the supermarket like a time traveller. Literally going, what? Like £1.50, £1.70 for a bag of salad. And that's where I got the idea from. Because it's like don't get me wrong, I can understand some of the backlash. I can understand some of the negativity. Because it's like an old school point of view. Because people are saying, well, hang on a minute. Let's say if you plant up like all your front garden full of potatoes. Well, you know, even with the high prices, you can get a huge sack of potatoes from Lidl for, you tell me, I mean, it's not expensive really, is it, relatively? You can get a big bag of potatoes for like 10 quid, so.
10 quid, I'd say, yeah.
And people saying, well, you know, you can't make it work. But then my comeback was, well, that's why I'm not growing potatoes.
Yeah.
I'm growing expensive things. And the key is quick turnaround.
When you say expensive stuff, what exactly would you say?
So I targeted like a lot of salad herbs.
Okay.
So things like wild rocket.
Yeah.
Sorrel, bloody dock, which is a really cool salad herb with like a red vein.
Yeah.
Quite bitter. A plant called celery leaf, spinach.
Yeah.
And then loads of beans as well. You know, like bean plants that you grow up the trellis and you just get so many.
Yeah.
And so it's all about, and this is, I think, what people, you know, we were talking about barriers to people doing this. I think it's the know-how and I think it's the strategy that I think, you know, it's all about the quick turnaround.
Mm.
Because, you know, ultimately, if you've, you know, I'm doing this growing in a tiny front garden. So the space is very valuable. And you've got to literally look at each bed and go, right, that's taking up space in that bed. If I'm not getting something back from it, it's kind of wasting space. But when I planted spinach, I mean, you know, we eat so much spinach, literally really intensively planted up a couple of beds with spinach. And I'm not joking. I don't think me and my wife, we haven't bought any spinach for about 4 or 5 months. Mm. We haven't bought any bags of salad for about 3 or 4 months. And what's really interesting is, you know, I've mentioned about the sort of somewhat negative reaction from certain elements of the sort of traditional gardening community.
Mm.
But there hasn't been a single negative reaction from my local area. And I think that's really interesting. Like, you know, when you have people work on your house and especially, you know, you have a bit of banter.
Yeah.
And you know that like a bit of piss take, that's normal. Not a single person has taken the piss. Every single one of them has said like, well, what are you doing in your front garden? And I've explained. And straight away they've gone, yeah, that makes sense, mate, to be fair. You know, like a couple of quid for a bag of salad in the supermarket. Quid's in.
This will make a lot more sense if people go and see the videos that are on your Instagram. What was the name of your Instagram account again for that?
Yeah, so if you follow Andy Grows Herbs.
I'll stick the links, obviously, in the show notes, but that's your chance. Go follow that and have a look at these rants and tutorials and get to see the garden for yourself because it is cool.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because actually off the back of that, a lot of local organisations reached out to me, but they actually reached out and said, you know, we want to start growing a little bit ourselves, you know, for maybe for well-being. But actually, so it's food, and I think that's really cool.
I might have missed it, but what's the whole aim of that? Was it to prove to like the people in the community that they could also go and do the same thing?
Yeah, and I think also.
But surely you already had the knowledge, so somebody else will have to, someone like me, I'm absolutely clueless, terrible at growing anything. I would have to learn it all, and see, it's quite an investment of time.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm very much about. 2 years ago, I got approached by a publisher and they wanted me to write a book about growing herbs. And it was a really interesting conversation because they offered me the gig and I really wasn't sure about it because I didn't want to write just another gardening book. There's already some really good books out there. And unless I was doing something different, I didn't really want to do it. And in the end, we wrote down a few things on a piece of paper in the very first meeting with the publisher. And I thought the woman who went on to be the editor for the book, you know, she really, really just nailed what we need to do and what the barriers are to people growing their own. She said it's about having the inspiration. So actually having somebody that could turn around to you and go, you can do this. You actually can do this. But then the second part is actually having the information, the education.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a few small growing tips. And I think for me, like one of the really powerful things about social media is that we live in a world now where there is so much information out there. Mm-hmm. And also, I think on social media, especially in the gardening community, there's a really, really good vibe that it's actually a bit different to traditional horticulture, where actually if you go onto Instagram, even tonight, and kind of just post and say, what can I grow in July in Birmingham in a pot? I can almost guarantee you that someone will actually reach out to you and give you some advice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool. You know, it's a very sort of supportive community. Mm. I guess with the project that I'm doing, I am quite stubborn and I do quite like proving a point. Do you know what I mean? If somebody says you can't do something, I love doing it. And I think it's kind of cool that, like, I've done this growing project in a place that, shall we say, is not exactly renowned for its horticultural endeavours.
Does this kind of link to, do you know, the Food Legend Fund? Is that where that kind of originated from? So, yeah, anyone who doesn't know, obviously, that's the Birmingham Food Strategy, which we've got a podcast coming up with some of the organisers of that. But they had done a Food Legend Fund where they gave out grants to local people like yourselves who were planning to do some awesome things that's based around changing, basically, Birmingham's whole relationship with food, the way we grow it, the way that we bring so much in, just everything, really. It's, I mean, it's, when I asked to see the strategy, I thought it was like an A4 slide or something. And Bradley, who was at the dinner, he laughed me out of it and came back 2 minutes late with this massive book. And I was like, you want to read it, mate? There you go. And then he just poof, poof, on the table. I was like, oh, shit, yeah, this is serious. Like, but so you were one of the local food legends who won some. Did you win? Was it an application form? How was the process?
So I'm sitting here and I'm wearing a few different hats. I feel like, yeah, I should actually have some physical different hats here so that I can... differentiate my roles. Basically, we had a situation earlier this year. I run Urban Herbs. I was digging up my front garden to prove a point. I was releasing my first book. And basically, I mean, doing like 90 hours a week with Urban Herbs, I thought to myself, I've got a bit of spare time on my hands. You know, I could do something else. And basically, when I was promoting my book, the publisher, one of their biggest territories was actually in the USA. Brooklyn is a really, really happening place. It's a place where there's some really, really exciting things happening, especially post-COVID, growing-wise and food-wise. And so basically, in November last year, I went over to New York to promote the book, but also to actually, I mean, okay, fair enough, to do some photo opportunities, but also to thank some of the people that had actually helped me almost Americanize the book. And I'm walking through an area of New York called Hell's Kitchen, which, for anybody listening to this who's been to New York in the last 12 months, you'll know exactly what I mean, that there are a lot of social issues at the moment in New York, like quite a few American cities, but it was very bad when I was there. I'm walking through Hell's Kitchen, and if you can imagine, I recognised the name of this church because I'd seen them on Instagram. Literally, I knocked on the door and I said, this is going to sound really random, but are you the church that's literally got the flat roof where you've converted it into a growing space? And they were like, yeah, come on in. And it was the most incredible day of my life because, if you can imagine, New York, skyscrapers all around you. And on the 10th floor roof of this old Baptist church, they've got a growing space. And what they've done is they've started a food bank downstairs. And what they realised was, the same as what I said earlier, that actually, you know, the food bank, it was prioritising, you know, the processed food because you can't have too much wastage. But the people that are needing it, they need fresh food. So what they started doing was on the roof of the food bank, growing a few bits and pieces. And what they do is they grow a few courgettes or whatever, then literally run them down the 9 flights of stairs downstairs and put one courgette into every single food parcel. And it just took off. And it became so successful that they were really growing quite a lot of produce. And if you can imagine, I'm sitting there on this rooftop garden, talking to the volunteers, talking to people. And you know, when you just have that sort of like flash of inspiration that you're like, if they can do that in New York with very little assistance from, you know, local government or whatever, we can do that here. And I came back and I said to my wife, you know, all this spare time we've got on our hands, I think we need to do a little like community growing project. And it was at that time that, you know, the Food Legends came along and we kind of pitched an idea to them. We said, we want to start a non-profit, and that non-profit was called Spring Arts. And Spring Arts has literally just taken off. So we're going into primary schools, mainly primary schools, and working with the kids to create small scale growing spaces. And as I said at the start, the kids are brilliant, but it's been eye opening, to be honest with you. It has been eye opening in terms of, you know, the lack of connection between the growing and the food. I know it's a cliche that, you know, for years and years, kids have been sort of saying, you know, oh, I didn't know that's where carrots came from.
Yeah.
But it's eye opening to see it. And what's really cool about what the Food Legends are doing, you're not going into a school and going, oh, yeah, we created a garden, well done. And then like 6 months later, it's just forgotten. Mm. What we're actually doing is we're working with these schools, but as part of the funding, as part of the project, we're actually writing a how-to guide. So in theory, this is something that could be replicated by teachers or by community groups in any school across Birmingham or really across the UK.
Yeah.
Because it's been an eye-opening experience because, you know, all my optimism when I'm standing on that rooftop in New York, actually doing stuff like this, it's more complicated than you think. Because actually, when you look at the growing calendar, you know what I explained to you about my year?
Yeah.
About when, you know, you plant stuff at a certain time of year, you harvest stuff at... Try and mesh that into the school calendar. Because it's like, you get all this stuff going and then everybody goes off for Easter for 2 weeks. And then you come back after Easter and everybody's doing the SATs exams. And at that point, and I can totally understand why, but if you said to a teacher, oh, could I have like 5 or 6 hours of your time every week? The answer isn't going to be positive.
No.
So, you know, I suppose over the last 3 months, we've been able to really learn a lot from these trial projects. And we are in the process of writing this guide, which, you know, hopefully we'll be able to help other people to replicate what we've done. So it's actually giving that kind of legacy. And that's what I like about, you know, what this strategy is, that it's not just about a one-off, you know, and then the funding gets turned off and, you know, all these growing spaces get forgotten. You know, I really, really hope that this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope that what we've done is replicated in schools across Birmingham, because I've seen the difference it's made to kids. It's absolutely unbelievable. One of the schools that we work in has got one of the highest percentages of kids for whom English is not their first language. And it's incredible to see the kids, you know, maybe year three and year four. And there's a real language barrier between each of them, between them and us. But just over the sort of 8 weeks of doing a project, you see them come together because they're working practically. And that, you know, as you said earlier about the sensory side of things, with hands in the soil, grounding themselves. And to be fair, they're well into it now. I think we might have created a new generation of Birmingham farmers.
That'd be great if you have.
Would that be the dream then for every school, maybe in the country, let alone Birmingham, have their own fit, like allotment kind of space and just having real lessons about nutrient dense soil? Because a lot of people don't even realise, like, a carrot, two carrots might not be the same. Like, you get the organic carrot from the supermarket, you get a carrot that you might grow, which has like 10 times the nutrient, and then you have the cheapest of the cheap, which has been mass produced, mass farmed. No care has gone into the soil or into the actual growing process. And people don't realize it's not just about calories. It's not just about getting, oh, well, I need that calorie. No, how much nutrients are in that calorie? And the calorie for calorie is not the same nutrients. You got to learn about that in school from a young age, you know.
And I do think, to be honest, that times are changing. I see it myself. As we said a few minutes ago, there's been that many crises over the last like 5 years. And every single time it's like, oh, it's just a one-off. We'll be back to normal in a few weeks. And I think it's really part of a growing trend. And I think that actually growing food is rapidly becoming a life skill. And even if literally growing some of your own food isn't, I would argue that mental health-wise, it's vital. There's a school that it's not a school that we've actually worked with, but a school in Moseley who they've done brilliant work creating a school garden on Urban Herb's YouTube channel. If anybody listening to this goes onto our YouTube channel and just types in magical school garden, you'll see the video. It's got a lot of hit because it is very inspiring. Like, they've literally turned a bus shelter into like a greenhouse.
Oh, wow.
It's really cool. They were saying to me how increasingly, you know, I just said about how you get Easter holiday and then you get SAT. And even for like kids in year four and year five and year six, they're not old, you know, they're not teenagers really. They're sort of what, 8, 9, 10 year old. There's so much stress being put onto them. And actually, you know, let's be honest, like, not everybody is naturally academic. Like, not everybody excels at adding two numbers together. I mean, I wasn't one of them. You know, that wasn't me. And it's about finding, like, I'm a big believer that, like, honestly, everybody's got their skill. Everybody's got their passion. And it's a case of, you know, if you find that, then that's magic, you know. And this school in Moseley, they were saying to me how kids who were, you know, causing trouble in the classroom and just were not engaging at all. Suddenly, if you make them head gardener, then they're engaged. Mm. And they're like early into school because they want to check on the courgette.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's worth remembering as well that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are under pressure in every aspect. And it's not a foregone conclusion that these kids, you know, will have had that fresh food. And I think it's really cool to actually introduce them to that in that setting.
Well, it's, imagine that then. You have a cookery class then once, and you can take a few of the vegetables from the garden. Blow kids' mind, being able to taste this. You've just grown them vegetables from scratch. Now you've made it, taste it. How can that be? That's surely an improvement for society, like if we have more, every kid doing that.
And I think as well that it is a bit of an equaliser. I think I'm becoming a bit of a revolutionary. I think I'm genuinely, I think I am feeling a bit revolutionary, to be honest. Because, you know, I mentioned to you about some of the less positive reaction to some of the content I've been putting out. And I should stress, by the way, that I'm a big believer in positive energy, and you can't have a negative without a positive, right? Mm-hmm. That the two have to coexist, and it's all energy anyway. Mm. But I was really intrigued by some of the comments that were kind of saying, well, hang on a minute. If somebody's living in a down-to-earth area, they're not going to be eating pak choy anyway. And it's like, well, why not? You know, why not? Why shouldn't you be able to enjoy nice food?
Mm.
And that's my point. Yeah. That actually kind of like growing your own, as you say, it's not just about comparing it to the base price of, you know, because I've been measuring all my output on the sort of cheapest Asda prices. Do you know what I mean? It's not just about comparing it to the cheapest baseline. Because, you know, I mean, myself and my wife, you know, the story of our business, we did all the farmers market.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine, when we first started doing those farmers markets, we were about like, you know, early 20s. And I'm not being funny, but we were doing these markets and the produce, if we'd paid full price for it, we could never in a million years have afforded it. But we were sort of bartering. We were swapping a few pots of rosemary for organic veg. And once you've tasted the difference, it's night and day.
It's hard to go back once you've done that.
You know, just before the podcast started, we were talking about some of our mutual friends. And big shout out to Dan, Flying Cows. Like, once you've had that sort of like quality meat, or, you know, quality street food, you can't go back.
Nah.
And that's what I think is cool about growing your own. That it actually kind of boosts you up a couple of tiers, that suddenly you're not just relying on the cheapest kind of, if the cheapest supermarket has got a few bits and pieces. Well, you're kind of growing your own organic produce, aren't you?
Mm.
And that's really powerful.
You can do it to focus on the flavour, not to just make a profit.
Maybe this is something I should go on Instagram and be a bit more, a bit more reconciliatory. But do you know what? One of the things that I was really curious about, you know, when I first dug up my front garden, I was really curious about whether or not it would change me. So whether or not it would influence my eating.
Mm.
Because I had this sort of notion that it would make me eat a bit more plant-based. And it kind of has. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still love a burger. Don't we all?
Yeah.
But it's weird how if you've got that fresh produce there, you're more inclined to use it. So, you know, I've cut out a bit of carbs, and, you know, we've been bulking out meals with spinach, and it really does work.
Yeah.
And when people are talking about, you know, the problems we've got with the health situation and access to healthcare, I think it's a good idea keeping yourself as healthy as possible, to be honest with you.
I keep telling anyone who will listen that you've got to look after yourself now. You've got to, you can't rely on the health as fantastic as the NHS is. Unfortunately, you just can't rely on it. You can't rely on there being a pension. You've got to look after yourself in every aspect of life now. And that's just the best way you can do that, is to look after your health as much as possible. And I know you might say, yeah, but like, I'm just going to go for the cheapest option. You would do that. But then in 10 years' time, if you've got some kind of illness, I hope you don't, and we say, oh, do you remember that time? If you could have added up all them pounds you spent on the chip and bought the more expensive, more nutritious option, but how much would you pay to be healthy now? And they'd be like, oh, I'd pay anything to be healthy now. I'd pay anything. But at the time when you're in the supermarket, you think, oh, I'm just going to get the cheapest option and worry about nutrition another time.
And I think as well that growing your own, it's like a double whammy in that you get access to this sort of higher quality produce, but just by virtue of the fact that it's literally, you know, when you talk about how fresh it is, it's literally like 10 seconds fresh.
Yeah.
But also it's the effort that you put into growing it, that it's that gentle, regular exercise that just, I think, just keeps you just, you know, I read somewhere that it's really, really key, you know, to do that regular, to accelerate your heart rate, you know, and just do a little bit regularly. And that's really what this project's done for me. I mean, I have a very physical job, but it's really interesting. And even on my days off, I can't, you know, even if I just pop out to get some spinach for evening meal, it gets you up. Mm. It gets you doing stuff.
It's a few more steps further than the fridge anyway.
But in a way, I suppose I've created my own fresh produce aisle.
Yeah.
You know, I should get one of those little signs, shouldn't I? Fresh produce.
Fresh produce aisle. Is there anything Birmingham or food related that we haven't spoke about that's important to you that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think that it's worth saying that I owe Birmingham a huge debt because, you know, our business, we emerged. Like, you know, do you guys remember like around 2011, 2012 when street food was just buzzing, like it was exploding?
Yeah, it was like the start really for Birmingham anyway.
And it was like, bearing in mind, we are selling little pots of herbs, herb plants. You know, we took a bit of a gamble and we actually went to street food markets, you know, selling these plants, sort of not knowing if anybody would actually get it. And we're so grateful that they did, the visitors did, but also the street food chefs. And we learned so much from them. And Birmingham's just that kind of a place, I think, where, you know, people are very supportive. And, you know, it is that kind of place where everybody brings their own food heritage, just a little bit. And you see that now, don't you, even with all the diverse sort of street food that you can get in Birmingham, types of street food that you've literally never heard of. And, you know, that's an achievement, isn't it? You think it's all been done before. So, you know, I'm grateful to Birmingham because as a business, we are very much Birmingham based. And I think Birmingham has helped write our story a little bit. That's quite a good soundbite, isn't it, to end the podcast on?
That is a very good soundbite.
It does so much well, doesn't it?
We just end with a few fun questions of Carl's, just lighthearted, completely different to what we've been talking about.
What's your favourite TV show?
Oh, that's a great question.
But you don't know the answer.
Do you know what?
So many people are like, oh, that's good. Oh, I don't know, actually.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Myself and my wife, right? We are our sort of downtime is we will just binge or box set. I'm a big Star Trek fan.
Oh, nice. Any particular one?
Deep Space Nine. Old school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be Deep Space Nine.
Nice. What's your favourite movie?
Favourite movie? Oh, Layer Cake.
That's good. I never heard anyone say that. I completely forgot that film existed.
I based all of my business advice, not the aspect about selling drugs, but all of the business advice that I've implemented in the last 10 years has come from that film.
How did we completely forget about that? We were having a big talk about Guy Ritchie the other day.
I don't think it's Guy Ritchie film, is it?
I think it is.
Layer Cake. Guy Ritchie.
It's my favourite film and I don't know.
I don't think it is.
Right.
Either way.
We'll fact check this. Is there a book you'd advise, other than your own, obviously? Although you can plug your own book, that's not a problem. Is there a book you'd advise people on for growing herbs in their garden themselves? But please plug your own.
I would recommend a book that was written by an absolute legend called Andrew Perry, called The Herb Gardening Handbook. I think that's the definitive guide to growing herbs.
Yeah,
in small spaces in the 21st century.
Right, everyone.
I'm just reading off the cover now.
Yeah. So everyone, get that book if you want to grow your own herbs. Do you have a favourite herb?
That's a difficult one because people do take the mickey out of me on social media. Because I'll do a video and I'll say, "This is my favourite herb." I'll say, "This is why strawberry mint is my favourite." And then they'll scroll back 5 videos and I'll be like, this is why hot and spicy oregano is my favourite. I'm going to put it out there that I think lime mint is my favourite because it's the strongest flavour. And, you know, it's one of those ones that when you come back to it, you forget how strong a flavour it is. Mm. Oh, and then I can't change my mind.
Yeah, of course you can.
Hot and spicy oregano.
This is an int. I haven't heard this one. What's this?
See, I was very tempted to actually bring a pot of hot and spicy oregano along this evening and get you guys to try some while we're recording the podcast to see if you can still speak.
Is it that hot?
It's not extreme. If you like proper chilies, you won't find it very hot, but it's like a jalapeno kick.
All right.
So it's Greek oregano, so it's musky flavour, but it's paired with a little jalapeno kick. See, I'm going with that final answer.
Yeah, you can keep that. I'm sold. I want to try this one now.
Do the next question before I change my mind.
Despite what you do, do you have a big fast food chain that you use the most? Do you have a favourite?
Oh, that's difficult. Because, I mean, fast food's something I take very seriously. It's had a major effect on my life. Not overly negatively so far. Do you know what? I'm going to go with, right, you know when we've done a long Urban Herbs day? You can't beat a Domino's pizza.
That's a good one.
Domino's pizza, if you're listening, right, I'm willing to do anything for sponsorship.
Yeah. What's your order? Do you have a go-to?
Go-to order?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Texas barbecue.
I love that idea.
Like, that's proper sort of like, you know when you've had a hard day and that's your little treat?
Yeah.
Me and my wife, and it's a really random one, this, that my wife, Kate, you know, she's not a big sport fan. The one sport that the two of us will both watch is boxing. We're both huge boxing fans. And you know, if there's a big prize fight, Domino's pizza, after a long Urban Herbs day, I'm in heaven.
Sounds good. Sold.
How many more times do I have to mention Domino's before I get some kind of little financial deal?
We should get something for this as well.
Don't worry, I'll cut you in.
You're a big foodie. I don't know if you're allowed to answer this question. Do you have a favourite restaurant in Birmingham?
That's really difficult. Okay, so I'm going to reel off a few here.
Yeah, go on, why not?
In the Jewellery Quarter, Pasta di Piazza in St Paul's Square. I really like that place.
Everyone forgets about that place.
I've been there a couple of times.
Rustic, yeah. Very good.
And I think it's really, like, you know, you can tell that it's family run and it's just a nice go-to place. But a bit of a random shout out. I lived in Bearwood for years. Do you guys know the Mexican restaurant that's open?
A la Mexicana.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, that got some really big write-ups. And a couple of months ago, me and Kate went there for the first time. Bearing in mind that, you know, I used to walk past that place on the way home from school. I know Bearwood like the back of my hand. Mm. And it is very impressive.
I don't know anyone that's been that doesn't think the same thing.
No, we were blown away.
Because you look online and you just think, it looks okay. Mm. Even the food pictures, it looks nice, but it doesn't look like anything's going to blow you away. And then your first bite of anything new there is just like, fucking hell, have they packed so much flavour in this?
Bearwood's doing exciting things at the minute. Do you watch that Bearwood Bites on YouTube? She's doing cool stuff trying to highlight Bearwood.
But I've got to say, Bearwood is just one of those places. Other areas have all got their selling points. But to me, and I can say this because I lived in Bearwood, Bearwood's often been a bit sort of run down as a, you know, by the people that live there. Mm. Sort of, you know, do you know what I mean? You always take the mickey out of the place you live in, but it's got a lot going for it. And it's almost got that kind of up and coming spirit. Kashmir Cottage. If you guys have ever been to Kashmir Cottage, at the bottom, it's a curries.
I haven't tried it. I've heard of it.
The guy that actually runs it now, he was in my class at school, and it's a wicked place.
Good place. Is it more of a desi pub or a traditional kind of Indian?
It's, do you know something? I don't know if you can eat in now. Mind you, if we're just doing random shout outs, I've got to say, I do like an old school night out at, you know, Akbar's on Hackney Road.
Yeah.
It was my go-to place for birthdays for many years.
It's still around, isn't it?
It's still there. It's still good going. As well from Rock and Gabba. I haven't been for a very long time there. Like, yeah. A very, very long time.
I did the Fall Challenge, you know, the Chef's Challenge last year, and I'm still recovering, so...
No, I do like a vindaloo, but I don't think I could go any hotter.
I mean, to be fair, we could talk about chilies for hours.
Yeah.
But to me, the vindaloo, it's a certain flavour, which I used to really like. But now I think I probably would just go all the way and have the Fall or just a Madras. Because it's that both have actually got nice flavours as well as being life-changing.
And last question, other than Birmingham, do you have a best food destination in the world? You can pick anywhere in the world you like for this one.
I think probably New York.
It comes up so much.
Yeah, New York's a great place though.
It's coming up.
And I think this is going to sound really weird, and probably anybody listening to this in New York is probably going to think, what is this guy drinking? But... it's similar to Birmingham in terms of
I say that all the time.
It is, isn't it? Like the sort of
say every week because everyone says Birmingham, so it comes up every week.
Everyone says New York, so I always say it's so similar to Birmingham. People are going to think I'm mad.
But there is a fusion of you know, like you get, and it's the same in Birmingham that you get sort of different communities. You get different people that come from different parts of the world, and they bring their food with them, with the food heritages. And I always say to people, before we started recording, I was telling you guys some of the other places that I've lived, perhaps places that are a bit more sort of less multicultural than Birmingham. Mm. And do you know what I missed most of all? I just missed, you know, that dynamism.
Yeah.
And that vibrancy and that kind of the fact that there's restaurants opening doing food that you like, you're actually not quite sure what to order.
I so, like yeah. that. I like having to ask. I'm like, yeah. what? I'll just be hold my hands up. I ain't got a clue what I'm ordering here. What's going on? What do you think? What's good? That's the best way to order anyway. Ask the person working there. What's good? What's a big seller? What's great?
I've got a bit of a party trick actually that I've started doing in restaurants, and it does my wife's head in. I'll say to the person takes the order, I'll say, can you just surprise me, please? And they're like, oh, what do you... No. Can you just like, please, can you just surprise me, whatever? And I've started noticing the pattern now that the bill's gone up and up because...
yeah. And the lobster, sir.
yeah. I mean, it was very nice.
I think going back to New York, the people of New York are quite similar to people of Birmingham as well. I feel like all these cultures that come over, they're proud of where like their parents are from or where they might have been from, but they're also proud of New York, and people here are also very proud of Birmingham. Like I would say I'm proud Irish, but I'm proud Brummie as well. Mm. And I think most people have that kind of same thing.
So if we go in New York and you say everybody says that.
Oh, it comes up, I'd say at least 50%.
Could you say what was the second?
Yeah, go on.
What would you say other people? What was the most second post popular?
What's that place?
London was a lot.
London comes up. What's that? Is it Copenhagen?
Oh, Fazenda, was it?
Where's that?
Fritzen or something in Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden. Yeah. A lot of the Nordic countries come up a lot.
Yeah.
We went to Norway a couple of years ago, and you know that everybody says it's very, very expensive.
Mm.
And we literally were living on the free little muffins that they give out in the reception in the hotel for about a week. I was just going to say, I think Berlin deserves a bit of a shout out.
Yeah, I've been to Berlin. It was only on a stag do though, so I can't comment about the food too much.
I mean, we went there just before lockdown, I think. And it was the first place that I'd been to where I actually went, this is like a few steps ahead of us in terms of the food. That, you know, there were restaurants where, and I don't know if it's still a trend now, but there was quite a few restaurants where you could literally go up to the counter and it was all like glass sort of kitchen, so you could see the kitchen, but it was like, You know, it's very normal now for you to be able to look into the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
but you're actually ordering from the chefs.
Mm. Bit like street foodie vibes then.
So you literally would go up and me and Kate literally got the giggles because we were like, what do we do? And the guy was like, you can order anything. We've got all this meat. We've got this. We've got that. And they'd cook it for you right there. And then they'd say, right, over there, you've got all your pots of herbs. Just snip them off the plant and put them on your food.
Berlin looks like an exciting place, man.
It's a very, very happening place.
Mm.
But you know what? In terms of my foodie destinations, it's coming second to Birmingham. Yeah. Was that the right answer?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
of course
a good
it
answer.
Is.
Awesome, mate. This has been phenomenal. Like, I've learned so much. I feel like I should have took notes, but luckily I get to edit
it. You get to hear it again.
So I get to take notes while I'm editing, which is good. And hopefully one day I might not kill a houseplant. Thanks for giving us some of your time, mate. I mean, everyone can hear how frigging busy you are. Really appreciate it.
Well, I've lost track of what time it is in the evening, but normally at this time of year, I'm in bed for about 8:15 in the evening.
All right, it's past your bedtime.
It's past your bedtime.
This is a late night special.
Awesome, mate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.